Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Welcome back to another Buyer Side Chat. I'm your host, Eugene Gatso, and this week we're going to be speaking with Chad Wunderling, who's the SVP and Chief Accounting Officer at SalesLoft. Chad actually got his start at one of the big firms, KPMG, in accounting before jumping over to Ceres Global. Ceres Global, they're around $6 million in revenue when he joined. He saw that grow to over $500 million. He was a third person in finance there. By the end, you know, there were over 10 folks on the finance team. So a lot of growth. After that, he was the VP Corporate Controller at Rubicon, another high growth startup. And then SalesLoft is actually his third high growth startup. He's been there over 3 years now. Saw them grow from 275 to over 750 employees. They've obviously added a ton of technology to the stack, and him in his unique position has been on the buying end of many of those softwares. So this week we're going to talk about, one, what is a chief accounting officer? How is it different than the other finance roles? What do they actually care about? Two, what outbound emails actually catches attention in a good way and potentially make him want to set a meeting? You can imagine being at SalesLoft, got a pretty particular view on this. Three, we're going to talk through how to effectively use LinkedIn to connect and start a conversation with someone, some of the do's and don'ts that he's experienced recently. And then four, why sales is like dating. We'll let him unpack that, but you know, for better or for worse, a lot of parallels there. Hopefully some lessons we can learn. So let's jump right in. Chad, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Great to be here, Eugene. Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm especially excited about this one. Besides the intro, I just went through your background, but I know personally I've sold you some things. You've also decided to not buy some things from me. So we have a nice balance, a nice rapport of some yes and no. So I'm excited to get to the bottom of this.
That's right. Yes, let's do it.
The first thing I wanted to jump into, it's something my colleagues and I in sales have always debated and tried to figure out is, you know, what is a CAO? I feel like it's a relatively new title. I'm seeing it more and more, but if you wouldn't mind helping us understand what you actually do, what you care about, and how it's different from some other finance roles.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair question, because really it's probably only been within maximum like the last 10 years where we've began seeing kind of the chief accounting officer and kind of like that role within the company. And, you know, I think that speaks to, one, the value that the accounting function can play within an organization as a whole. And then two, I think it speaks to a broader sort of regulatory type of environment and demands from the accounting function. And you typically only see CAOs at companies that are public. So, you know, particularly here at SalesLoft, it's like whether we go public at some point in time, that's completely separate. But I think, you know, our ultimate objective is to certainly act and behave as though we're public. So I think, you know, our executive leadership team obviously made a decision that we would need this role. And so I think it's a tribute, one, to, I think, what we've been able to do at SalesLoft from an overall business. But then in addition to that, of course, to the team and to the value that the accounting function certainly wants to provide to the business as well.
Got it. What's maybe the difference in what you as the CAO care about versus maybe a VP of finance, like what they are responsible for or care about?
Yeah, so I would say this is probably one of the unique things about my role is under me, I've got procurement. So us buying, and then I've also got kind of the deal making side of sales. So what's unique is, say, like the VP of finance might historically just perhaps have one of those. And in very rare cases, will they have both? I'm really at the intersection of those two things because I have procurement and sort of the deal origination sales side. So this gets into probably what we're going to hit on some here in this discussion, but it's like, I think it provides a great opportunity. And I think this is for my particular role and even the chief accounting officer as a whole really can provide a lot of value to not only to the business, but even more specifically, our sales team, because the CAO, and in my case, I can see what folks who are selling to us, how we're buying and how they're selling. And that needs to be feedback and some intelligence and some marginal improvements that I can give also to our sales team as well.
Got it. So it's not just finance or budget approvals come through you. Like, you, since you actually have the procurement team under you, see a lot of the buying decisions or not buying decisions and the whys and why nots. So you get involved in those processes. So you have a lot of visibility into that. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Very cool. So let's jump into emails. So most people know sales ops is kind of the king of email sales engagement, sales enablement. So I'm really curious, from your perspective, being at one of the leading organizations in a buying seat, what makes a good outbound email? What catches your eye? What might actually get you to respond or pass this to someone or even take a meeting?
Yeah, I would say, I think the biggest thing and the first thing that I look for in an email is one is authenticity. Like the seller actually being authentic and personalizing a message to me. And of course, I get a ton of emails like this where if I sense that it could just go to anybody, it's like, nah. I want that authentic message that's personalized and crafted for me. The other thing is I want to see why us and why me, but then also why them. And what I mean by why them is, is why do you think you should earn our business? And then secondly, as part of that, which I hope we get more into, is I want to know, I want to have some sense from that initial email of the value that we could capture from whatever it is that you're trying to sell. Because ultimately, when you're selling, all selling simply is, and of course, I'm not a sales expert, but all selling simply is a transfer of a belief. And I need to get an immediate sense of that within that initial email through authenticity. Why us? So why me? And then also why you and why I should consider you.
Yeah. What do you mean by, what do you mean by value to capture? Because sometimes I feel like as a salesperson, I'm like, you're going to save 27% on X line item. I'm like, great, I showed the value. But I'm curious, does that matter to you? Are you looking for something else? Like, what will actually catch your eye as far as value?
Yeah, I would say this is it beneficial for salespeople to kind of quote ROI? And it's like, I feel like sometimes that's like salespeople trying a little bit too hard, because I want to know more. I kind of want to know, I want to go deeper than just that. So value would be like as simple as, how is what you're selling going to solve some of my problems? Now, as you as a salesperson, that forces you to really study and understand, okay, what could be a potential buyer's problems? What are their problems? And again, this goes back to the authenticity. It's like, yeah, you're probably gonna have to do your homework. You know, so you might have to ask some questions or get a sense of what our current tech stack is, how we placed it together, how we kind of fit everything together. What are our current problems that we're dealing with today? And then how could you help me solve those problems? That's kind of the value that I'm getting towards, is help me solve something, and how will your product help us solve a problem? That's ultimately what we want.
Yeah. How important is it for that initial email or first few emails to portray something unique or different? If you see someone that's like, right, spot on, I'm having that problem. Oh, that's an interesting way to solve it. Does it need to be like, oh, I've never heard of that before? Or does it just need to make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I think it needs to make sense. But I think the authenticity is a big component as well. So like, I don't really care too much about what you've, it's kind of goes back to this, to the mentality a little bit of what I think a lot about is I don't care how much you know, I want to know how much you care. And if I can get a really good sense pretty quickly on if a sales individual has done sort of their homework and their due diligence on, say, me and say sales op before buying from you potentially. And that tells me that you care. So that goes to the authenticity, but then also it's like, hey, if we're dealing with a problem, I want to see that the research that you did certainly makes sense. And, I don't care so much about other people's problems, which you deal with every day, but, I want you to care about our problems.
Yeah.
And I hope that you can kind of develop some sense of what those might be, and personalize that to us.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. One of the things I think through is whether timing is everything, or if you can actually maybe educate a buyer on a problem that they're having, but they're not thinking about. For these emails that are resonating with you or being passed your way, is it really just a timing thing? Like you and the CFO are sitting down, it's like, hey, we got to accomplish this, and this is our biggest pain point, or oh my God, this email's coming at the perfect time. Or have you had some emails come in, you're like, you know what, I haven't thought about that, but that's a great point. You know, let me take a meeting.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I think that probably depends. It really depends on one, who your buyer is. And I think the thing that I'm always trying to think about as a leader is, and I think that's one of the biggest challenges for the seller, because, as a buyer, it's like, we've got very clear priorities. Like we've got our priorities. What do we want to achieve this quarter? But then also more broadly, what do we want to achieve this current fiscal year? And as we think about attacking those priorities, I want to keep our focus really on what those things are. So from that standpoint is, yes, it can be about timing because we've got our Q1 priorities or Q2, whatever it is. But then at the same point in time, the thing that I'm always trying to think about as a leader is, okay, where are my blind spots? And where are our blind spots? And so if we sort of mine for our own blind spots, then I think we can kind of keep our eyes open to those problems that we might have that we just might not be aware of. And then what I like to do as well is, and it kind of goes hand in hand with timing and problem, is I like to go out and kind of, maybe do some inquiring, even before the sellers even reach out. But hey, there's a type of software that, I'm kind of curious about this, not necessarily like an advantageous buyer, but I want to understand how, this might solve some of our problems incrementally. And then also I try to think about as well, is this isn't maybe such a big problem today, but at some point in time in the future, it will be. So then what should be our timing consideration here? And it's very difficult because it's difficult to go to someone that's selling, why software and ask them that, because it would be like, well, this quarter, just buy it this quarter. Well, I like to get, different opinions and different thoughts on specific type of, say software tools, to help plan for, future needs. So it's a combination of, problem versus timing as well.
Yeah. I feel like that extends to the whole sales process. It's so easy as a seller. It's like, well, what I'm selling clearly solves the biggest problem. And if it's not your biggest problem, it should be the biggest problem. But really, if you're shifting priorities, it needs to be a really big problem because you've outlined your goals for the quarter or goals for the year. And
yeah.
But like it always goes down to patience. You build a good rapport and there's a really strong business case. If not this quarter, you set yourself up for success next quarter if you do the right things as a seller.
Yep.
So
yep, that's exactly right.
Okay. I'd love to hear your thoughts on maybe the best sales process you've been a part of, or just what comes to mind as a buyer. What things have made your life easier in the buyer's seat?
Yeah, I think you know, I think one, starting off on the foot of, you know, getting to really genuinely understand what our problems are. And I think that the element of kind of, as I think about kind of like what makes a successful sales process, or what would be an enjoyable process from my seat and from my standpoint as a buyer, it's the authenticity of the seller relative to, you know, the buyer's problems and the buyer's challenges, and really genuinely trying to understand those. And, you know, I think if you can kind of, as a seller, really make it about the buyer, as opposed to trying to just push so hard to get it to, say, a finish line. Yeah. Because really, it's like, in all reality, the finish line that's typically thought of as the traditional finish line, that's just the starting line. Mm-hmm. And too much is, I feel like there's this big push to get to a finish line. But really, I think seeing that as a seller, as the very beginning of the customer's journey, I think is very critical. So it's having a mind towards the customer's also future success as well. And yes, it starts off in the buying process. So I think the authenticity, genuinely learning about the customer and about the customer's needs and problems. And then I think the other big thing is just like pure honesty through the process and total candor, where it's like, this is not going to solve, say, every single problem you guys have, but, you know, it can solve, you know, 8 of your 10 problems. And then here's how we have seen, say, other customers think about the other 2, or, you know, here are maybe some other recommendations about the other 2 problems. So I think it's being very candid about what you're not able to do as well with what you're selling, because of course, like anything anybody's selling is going to be, you know, the greatest thing and the greatest solution. But yeah, in reality, we all know that all solutions are continually to evolve all the time. So it's pure honesty on kind of the reality of it. And the reason why that's so critical is because you want to set your customer up for future success. And I think that's really what it really comes down to in the buying process. So I think that those are some of the key core ingredients that I've at least seen. And sometimes even I haven't seen them. And those have been some memorable kind of buying processes from the other side. But I think those are the biggest.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited to get to pet peeves. But one thing I wanted to go deeper on, I feel like something that's really tough as a seller is, you know, you always hear you want to do really good discovery because you want to understand what the buyer's challenges are and what they're going through. But oftentimes you can hop on the phone and they say, hey, just show me the demo. Tell me what you do. Like, you asked for this meeting. So it's hard to, you know, let me ask you 20 minutes of discovery questions and then I'll show you a demo. Like, how do you think about like that balance?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And kind of the way I think about it and you know, especially being in my position and in my seat, is you can't rely on me to give you all of our problems. It needs to be a combination of, one, do kind of your initial homework, do your initial due diligence. But then as part of that, like speak to my team members as well and get some information from them. Then by the time I see the demo and see the product, is, you know, I want to understand within that demo how your solution is going to help solve the problems that you've sort of kind of gathered up from a lot of your discovery work, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think it is a very delicate balance.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is, you know, you have a finite amount of discovery questions you can get out before there's this friction point of, hey, like, you've literally been asking me questions. I'd love to see what you do. So as a seller, it's your responsibility to, one, do as much research as you can beforehand. So don't be asking questions that you can find the answer to online. That's obvious step one, because you're just wasting bullets at that point. Two, if it's a multi-stakeholder sales process, don't just put all your discovery questions to one person and burden that person. It's spread it around and really understand how it impacts other people. And then something that I've done personally that I feel works well is you don't just need to front load a call with all questions and then backload with the demo. It's find a way to have a bit of a give and a get. There's a nice back and forth rapport. Now I know enough to get started and I'm going to keep asking you questions as we go along, but I have a good baseline. You don't need to run through your 20 question checklist before I'm allowed to show you a demo. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. Awesome. Pet peeves.
Yeah. So pet peeves, I would say like probably my biggest pet peeve is when there are sales folks that reach out on LinkedIn to connect, immediately connect, and then they message. And I think the thing that I always think about with sales is a lot like dating, where you need to take it slow. And that shows as a buyer, that shows a great sense of desperation from the seller, but then it also tells me you haven't done really much of your homework. So, and there's a lack of intentionality because you can do it to anybody and everybody, and you probably do that. Now, so while that's a pet peeve, here is a recommendation. Is connect, great. Go to one of my posts or go to one of your buyer's posts and look at something that they posted. Comment on something that they posted or reply to a comment, you know, that they had made or give a reaction to it. And look and see like, you know, kind of what is your buyer's sort of trends? What are they talking about, say within LinkedIn, because it is public. I think from that, then that shows an intentionality that tells me as the buyer that you're really thinking about your buyer and about what your buyer is doing. And then it also, you're taking it slower and you're being very intentional. And then you can then eventually message. And I think, you know, I've gotten a couple of those where, you know, some salespeople have even referred back to some comments that I've previously made. And that told me, it's like, oh, interesting. You know, it's like you are trying to study up on your potential customer and learn your prospect. So I think that's my pet peeve is the immediate reach out and message, connect and message. And I always like the analogy of it's like dating, just take it slow.
Yeah. Yeah. The themes I'm picking up on are authenticity. And then, you know, it's like dating, take it slow. And the way you build that authenticity is, you know, you're slowly building this relationship to get to a point to provide value that you now understand at least who this person is to some degree, what the company might be going through. Mm-hmm. And you may not be right on everything, but that's okay. It's you're doing the work and you think there could be alignment. So that's why it's worth a conversation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 100%.
Okay. Awesome. Any last advice for sales folks out there?
I would say this. I mean, being in my spot kind of as a finance leader, obviously at SalesLoft is, you know, to all sales folks is view your own finance function as a partner and view them as a resource and view them as sort of a group of intelligence in terms of. What I mean by that is because like what I referred to earlier is that finance people are at the intersection of what you buy and what you sell. And so you can learn a lot about how other people are selling tactics, other people are using from your finance function. And I think view them as a partner because within any deal, there are two finance teams and that is your buyer's finance team and then your own finance team. And I think really see those two parties certainly as partners. And then, you know, I think one of the big things that I've learned being in this position is, you know, you should always think about in terms of, say, when you think about getting a deal done is, what is the customer trying to optimize for? So we might be thinking about commercial terms, you know, various legal terms, whatever. What is it that the customer is trying to optimize for? And I think if you can get an understanding of, and this is sort of separate from maybe their problems that you're trying to solve through selling them whatever solution you have, but within the terms of the deal and the deal construction is, what is it that they're trying to optimize for? Because if I had a seller come to me and say, hey, Chad, as we think about pricing and putting this deal together, packaging, what is it that you guys are trying to optimize for? I think that shows, one, a high degree of consideration. And then two, if I want our sellers to ask that, because I want us to be able to get the customer's needs and desires out there, so then we can then package that deal and center it around what it is that they're trying to optimize for, whether it's, you know, cash flow, whether it's price, whether it's certain billing terms, payment terms, whatever it might be. I think I've always found that to be a very powerful question.
I love that. Anybody that's been on a team of mine knows I love what's called paper process, which is like the legal, the security. And I feel like it's so easy to be like, oh, I got a verbal yes. Hey, Chad, here's a contract. Let's let legal deal with it. But really, if you want to be an authentic and kind of next level buyer, it's, hey, we got some red lines back. First, let's understand what you're trying to optimize for. So then I can take those comments back and I can make sure the levers that are most important to you are the ones that we do the most work on, because we need to optimize for things on the business too. So it's not just leave it to the lawyers. It's like, what are the business terms that matter the most and why? And great, let's make it a win-win. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, very cool. Well, Chad, you've had such an amazing career and you're spending some good time here at SalesLoft so far. I'm curious, you know, what's got you still so excited about the company? Are you guys hiring? What's the deal?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great time to be part of SalesLoft. No time like the present on that front. Very exciting. Coming off a very successful year, that fiscal year that ended January 31st of 2022. We're incredibly proud of our partnership and investment from Vista that recently happened as we closed the calendar year of 2021. We are really looking forward to our fiscal year 2023 and this calendar 22. And so certainly we are hiring SalesLoft, www.salesloft.com, and plenty of open jobs on the sales front, sales reps, and then also other functions throughout the business as well, growing at a rate of nearly 60% year over year. So a lot of positive things happening. And we're super excited to be in the space that we're in sales engagement, because ton of opportunity here and potential.
Yeah, so cool. Chad, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have to get you back someday. I feel like there's so many more topics we could dive into, but appreciate your time and insights.
Anytime, Eugene. Thank you.